we can give all kinds of recommendations and tell people, you know, you have to avoid this percent non-structural carbohydrates and give them all these guidelines. But then what they're left with doing is managing the behavior of the horse and the happiness of the horse. And that's where all the recommendations in the world, like, it makes it very hard sometimes to practically keep these guys happy while following all the strict advice.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Blending passion for customer success with love for pet nutrition, Trow Nutrition. Kemen Pet Food and Rendering is dedicated to supporting longer, fuller pet lives. Biorigin, your partner in yeast ingredients for palatability, immunity, and nutrition. Trusted ingredients, proven performance. Rengen Pet Nutrition, we partner with a purpose.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another equine-focused episode of the Pet Food Science Podcast, where we dive into the science, trends, and real-world challenges shaping the way we feed and manage our horses. I'm your host, Dr. Alex Rankovich, and today we're joined again by Dr. Chris Heine, Associate Professor and Equine Extension Specialist at Oklahoma State University. Dr. Heine has a background in equine nutrition, reproduction, health, and management, and works closely with horse owners through extension, which I think will bring a really valuable and practical perspective into today's conversation. Dr. Heine, welcome back. It's really great to have you on again.
Oh, I'm delighted to be asked back. Thank you so much.
Of course. So in our last episode that we did together, we talked a lot about obesity and insulin dysregulation, including what it is, how common it is, and more of that underlying physiology. So today, I'm hoping we can sort of shift the conversation maybe towards sort of the practical reality of managing overweight horses, because I think that is where it starts to get really complicated and where a lot of horse owners tend to struggle.
I would absolutely agree, because we can give all kinds of recommendations and tell people, you know, you have to avoid this percent non-structural carbohydrates and give them all these guidelines. But then what they're left with doing is managing the behavior of the horse and the happiness of the horse. And that's where all the recommendations in the world, like, it makes it very hard sometimes to practically keep these guys happy while following all the strict advice.
At Trow Nutrition, we blend our passion for customer success with our love for pet nutrition, bringing together the art and science of nutrition, ingredients, and blending. We're here to dream with you and help you create standout products. We're here to deliver for you with dry ingredient, premixes, base blends, and specialty blends. And we're 100% dedicated to you with a complete focus on pet nutrition. See what Trow can do for you at TrowNutritionPets.com.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think before we get started, maybe to start us off, even though we did cover obesity last time, I think one of the challenges is that a lot of overweight horses can seem pretty quote unquote normal day to day. So from your perspective, what are some of the most important or maybe even underappreciated consequences that of obesity that owners really should be paying attention to?
Right. So I think everybody really recognizes thin horses and feel bad if they see thin horses, but there can be some real health ramifications for the obese horse. And certainly last time we talked about, you know, the insulin dysregulated horse, and that's a key part because that, you know, the more adipose tissue they have, the more adipokines that are the hormones that are active throughout the body that come from that fat tissue, right? So we can have, you know, inflammation. So that's a big one to think about. Again, if we recognize from the human side, inflammation creates issues with all parts of the body, right? So it's not just one specific thing, right? So whether it's immune effects, inflammation, vascular effects, like, we have not done a great job, I think, in really looking at all of the metabolic effects in the obese horse. Certainly we know the standard ones, but then there's just the thermoregulation, tiredness. If you're asking the horse to be a performance athlete, wear and tear on the joints. So lameness and arthritis is a huge problem in the horse industry and one of the performance limiters, why horses are retired. And so if we can be a little bit more proactive of keeping them in that lean, healthy state, I think we can maybe avoid some of those other issues.
Yeah, and I think some of the things that you brought up in particular, because at least here in Ontario where I live, show season tends to be in the summer and it gets really hot. And for some of these disciplines, the horse being a bit overweight is kind of the standard now. And so if you're, like you said, you know, asking this horse to be performing in the summer when it's hot, all those things do need to be considered and how obesity and that horse being overweight plays into all that and really affects their performance and their overall health and well-being and their long-term outcome as well.
Right. And you mentioned the show horses, and I couldn't quote the study, but a couple of years ago, and I don't remember who authored it, but that was an issue with judges and how they evaluate body condition in horses. And so the judges have this skewed view of how obese, and that's probably not the right word there, but how conditioned a horse should be to be successful in the show pen. And so, of course, owners are going to drift towards where judges are recognized.
Absolutely. If you're looking at this horse and thinking, hey, that's the gold standard, like that's where your norm shifts to. So I think it's a much bigger issue at play. And I don't know where we start with the education on that piece, but I agree with you that that's a big problem.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And it's not dissimilar to what we see in like confirmation dogs and things like
that. Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. But moving back into the horse owner, which I think is a bit more easier to manage than the judges in this conversation.
True.
When we move into actually managing these horses, like you mentioned, there's so many options, right? We've got the low NSC feeds, you know, different forage strategies, soaking hay, slow feeder options. And I think for some owners, if they don't have someone helping them along the way, I think just those different options can feel overwhelming on their own. So when you're working through a case and working with an owner that does have an overweight horse, what is sort of your decision-making process and sort of decision-making tree when it comes to what you're actually choosing as the right strategy for this overweight horse?
I think you have to be realistic about what they can do, right? So that's the balancing factor, right? So we could be, okay, go let your horse out for an hour and put him right back in. Well, not everybody has that ability to manage time schedules like that. We'll also tell people, okay, well, we want them on a dry lot, so we limit grass intake because it can be really high calorie. But what if they don't have a dry lot? Or what if then now the horse is dry lotted and all of his friends are outside? So there has to be a recognition of honestly what their facility is, what their hours availability is, and trying to balance the horse's well-being and that social life of the horse at the same time, which is why oftentimes, you know, the grazing muzzle idea still allows the horse to be out with their friends, still doing somewhat natural foraging behavior. But then it's going to be individual, right? Because some horses are going to, so there's a fun study, I think England, I don't remember who did this one either. I probably should. But the horses, like the ponies ate holes in their muzzle so that like they could still free feed. And then some ponies were like, this is a horrible life and I don't want to do this anymore. So you have to see how your horse handles it, to be honest. So even our best strategies, if the horse is like, I hate this, then the owner isn't going to comply with it. And some of those expensive slow feeders, the horses are still like, hey, I'll figure this out. And they're very capable of destroying all kinds of things. So it has to be what fits for your horse social environment, and all of those to try to slow that intake down. And to keep them in a little better state.
And I imagine just in terms of, you know, the working relationship with that client and overall compliance, like you must have better compliance and an overall better experience on both sides when you come into it saying like, hey, I understand your individual situation. You know, maybe it won't be perfect, but let's do what we can, as opposed to maybe giving rigid guidelines that they will either take it or leave it.
And again, I hate to always say I read a paper, right, without giving authors credit. I'm very bad about that, is remembering the point of the article and not who wrote it. But they did one where they were doing obesity management, trying to reduce body condition score. And then they had a metric of owner compliance. And so they had split the owners into how well they complied to it. And you're right, they separated them into three groups, ones that were right on top of things, and they had the most success, no surprise. And the ones that sort of followed recommendations, nothing really helped. They have to comply with all these strict feeding guidelines, yeah. Which is hard.
Yeah, for sure. It is hard, right? When people have work or families or kids, right? And it is a lot of different things to take into consideration. So kind of touching on that real world aspect before we get into sort of the behavior and all the fun horse specific stuff. You know, in some cases, people don't have a lot of control over maybe their horse's management if they're in a boarding situation. So maybe they can't change their forage type or their turnout or their feeding frequency. So in these less than ideal situations, how do you approach it? Or are there high impact changes that you typically would prioritize or recommend?
I mean, and that's kind of the perfect storm, right? So horses in a boarding stable where there's only one hay source and they're fed, you know, they go down the line and a lot of times they'll have something on the stall door, the half a scoop or whatever, this many flakes of hay, but still it's pretty uniform across the board. So in that case, I would encourage an owner, if possible, that they may need to help select separate hay, because I recognize telling a boarding stable to, you have to soak it and do these extra things, or that incurs an extra cost. And so that may be part of the discussion of, if my horse has to have some extra, you know, they have fees for blankets on and off often, like, so this may be part of that service for a boarding stable as well. Maybe that's part of their suite of services they offer, but trying to get a little bit more individual care, you know, are you putting the hay in a slow feeder versus tossing it in the stall? I mean, some of those I think are discussions that you really have to have, because that one size fits all model doesn't work for these horses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I know it's tough for the boarding stables too, but to your point, you know, really addressing the individual needs of those horses is critical. And I know I've been to barns where I've, you know, advised people at barns where they don't want to do like a hay analysis, as an example, because they're like, well, you know, we'll just bring in another batch of hay in like the next month or 2 months. And so like I often, you know, will pay for them myself, or I'll advise the owner, like, you know, well, in the grand scheme of things, it's not as much money as maybe some of these supplements, or, you know, you think about the vet care long term. That might be a consequence of not addressing some of these issues. So, but yeah, it really is a challenge, I think, trying to individually manage your horse when you don't have control over all the things you'd like to have control over.
And there's a lot of horse owners in that boat.
Yeah. Land is expensive.
And for a lot of people, that's just the expectation, right? Not that many people relatively have the ability to house them at home and, you know, manage them exactly how we advise people to do.
So you had already touched on this a little bit, but one of the biggest challenges that we have talked about before is that, you know, we're trying to restrict intake in an animal that's essentially designed to be continuously foraging and outside with his friends. And you kind of think about like what maybe an ideal horse would seem like to the average person. You think about lush green pastures, herds together on these pastures, etc. So we're putting these management practices into place. How do you manage the well-being, the mental well-being of these horses, given that you are maybe restricting that continuous forage intake, or you are maybe taking them away from their friends? What do you see actually working in the real world?
What appears to work the best has been the work with slow feeders, not intermittent, because that drives a little bit too much of anticipation. behaviors, right? So the idea that like I'll have feet applied here, then here, then here, like so that they're segmented time, that tends to create more angst, frustration, anticipation, which can create some conflict behaviors. So a lot of the slow feeder work has also shown it does reduce intake. Just making sure that it fits for the place that you're at, right? So there's some safety considerations with them that all horses have access to. There's some work with some concern about, you know, relatively where is the feeder? I don't know that there really has been any conclusive evidence that an elevated feeder is much worse, although there's a number of products that have the horse eating in a more neutral or natural position. The use of track systems, which essentially just means, and again, this is an acreage problem that a lot of times we create all these guidelines of, hey, create this little path system that the horse goes around. But
I see more of them though. Like I feel like it is becoming a bigger thing. And that owners are looking at them though, which is great because they're really cool. So
and even if you have, you know, smaller, it's, you know, maybe if you have a couple of those slow feeder devices, and I'm not going to do product names, but then place them in different areas so that the horse is foraging a little bit more, so that you still provide a little bit of that seeking behavior and locomotion. The other thing to think about, I think, you know, because when we're collecting data and count data, like you can say the horse expressed, you know, so many frustration behaviors, but I think we also have to look at the big picture too, into like, well, how much of that is acceptable? Like, is the horse frustrated all the time? Is his behavior changing? Is his attitude towards humans changing? Just because you see him toss his hay net twice, the main, like, maybe don't panic, like, let's look at it holistically. But if your horse is truly changing behavior, right, and they're becoming, you know, more agonistic behaviors towards herd mates or humans, like, then it may be time to pay attention. So just really, yes, snapshot moments in time are important, but also think about duration and the entirety of what you're seeing with them.
And what's your advice around grazing muzzles? Because I've seen those papers too, right, where you'll put a grazing muzzle on and you take it off and they gorge themselves. But I think for a lot of owners, they're like, oh, I feel mean, you know, making them wear it all the time, or like I put it on and then I take it off. So how do you typically approach that? And maybe just kind of the guilt that owners feel kind of putting something that maybe doesn't look so nice on their horse.
I get it, right?
Maybe some like bright pink and like fuzzy and sparkly or something, and then maybe they wouldn't look so scary.
So that's the always like the funny, maybe not funny, but the part of it that horses are also not non-intelligent, right? And if they've been restricted and then you give them access to something and they know you're going to take it back away, like, they can change feeding rate. And unfortunately, a lot of these obese horses have a higher feeding rate, have a higher in, like, as I've said before, they didn't get fat that way on their own, right?
So, they don't actually get fat on air. Yeah.
Yeah. Their feeding behavior is different, right? So it is different from other horses. They'll spend more time eating than another horse, right? So just their time budgets. And unfortunately, you're trying to alter their time budget and they're not probably going to be thrilled with it. And compliance is a key part of that.
And then in a similar, I guess, manner to the grazing muzzles, I think that owners are trying to do their best and have good intentions, but are there any other common mistakes that you typically come across when it comes to managing these overweight horses?
Ad lib. I mean, that's, and again, and we also tell people to do that too, right? Maximize forage intake. And in this case,
yeah, we talk about it with ulcers, colic, right? Like, yeah, we've really hammered that home.
Right. And so making sure there's hay always available and making sure the stomach's never empty, like all of that. And it's easier. And especially when I'm thinking about here in Oklahoma, we have a lot we do have more land, so you tend to see more horses housed together. And so round bales are really easy, right? That's ad libitum. You have no control over that unless, again, some of those slow feeder nets on them approach is taken. But all of that comes with more input costs, more awareness on the owner's side of things. And so I think it's combating all of the good advice we've given people about how much we want to make sure hay is in front of them and then flipping it on its
head. Yeah, I'm sort of flipping the switch on them in a sense, right? You're going, hey, sure, hold on. Maybe not.
Right. And, you know, yes, they're allowed to eat more lower quality hay, but we always mean safe, right? So I always put that back out there. Lower quality never means not safe. But hay producers don't try to make low quality hay. Why would they?
Yeah.
So they're trying to make the best product they can for horse owners. And so, yes, it can be a challenge to find lower calorie, high at the same time, higher quality, you know, meet nutrient needs, but be less calorically dense. Can be a struggle.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I, that's something we don't often think about is actually the person who's the farmer who's, you know, producing this hay and what their goals are when they're doing that. But going into the comment you made about nutrients there. So with dogs and cats, as an example, because we do have some listeners who are more familiar with dogs and cats, we often talk about how, you know, you're restricting energy, you have these weight loss diets, and they need to be more nutrient dense because the animal's eating less, but you still want to make sure that they're not deficient in any of those essential nutrients that they need. How do you approach that with the horse? Is that a concern?
Yes, because, and I actually just did this in class the other day, a lot of lower energy hays, right? So they're going to be higher in fiber, higher in ADF. When you have that, you're also going to have lower in protein, right? So then you've got to make up the gap a little bit. So for horse owners, some of the best products out there, and again, a lot of companies make these, so they're... you can pick your favorite and even different flavors. So your horse might pick their favorite too. But those ration balancers that are meant to be fed in such small quantities that literally help meet the horse's protein, mineral, and vitamin requirements with as little as 1 to 2 pounds. So very concentrated, they're not meant to have a lot of calories in them. And so those can be a great way to provide assurance to the owner. Like, okay, so now you can eat more of this lower quality hay to keep your mind busy, but I don't want you missing out on nutrients, so we can add this in. Some of the other products that are out there, and this is for owners that still, because I get it, right? If you've ever actually weighed out only a pound of feed and said, this is all you get, right. And then you split that between AM and PM feedings, it's not much, right? It really.
No, and we like, absolutely, like, feed and like love animals through food, right? It's like the same as kids. They've done studies, same as dogs and cats. Like you want to make them happy and you do that through food a lot of the time.
Yeah. So, and I know this is a visual here, but I have this little cup. I've actually weighed out ration balancer in this, and that's a pound if you fill this cup. So that literally means they would get half of that, right? For AM and PM. So it's not much. It's not what people are used to with like, I feed a scoop of feed. But to the same point that they've done this with companion animals, right? They do have low calorie feed so that you can feed more of it. So it has more feels attached to it.
Yeah. A lot of the time it is more about the owner who's doing the feeding and making sure that you're kind of appeasing them to then get to the pet. But now kind of switching gears a little bit. And so we talked about behavior in the horse. But when you think about the owner, and I think you'll have unique insight into this given your extension work, I think a lot of people do recognize that their horse is overweight or obese, but don't necessarily make changes. So why do you think that is? And are we missing something when it comes to actually getting owners and encouraging them to manage these horses and make changes?
A lot of things, I think it's hard. or they're in a situation, well, probably have a couple answers for this. One of the problems is if you don't have horses that match, right? So it's a lot easier to say, like, I have all of the horses here overweight, but what if you have one? And now, well, I have three horses. So what do I do with this one horse? I can't keep buying different types of hay and have everything separate. And then how do I feed these guys without him eating? Like, it literally becomes a issue of, it is not as easy to feed a horse as an individual unless they're in a stall. And what do we also tell people to do is get them out.
Keep them moving, keep them outside, yeah.
And so I think it's that piece that's really hard, right? It is a lot easier. And even, again, going back to the community, you know, my dogs will eat all their food, but they're still, like, locked up so that the correct one eats that food for its diet. And we just don't always have that availability for horses. So that is a challenge that I know when I've talked to people, they're like, well, it doesn't match up with my other horse. I think another part of that also is how critical it is. And you already talked about that, like, owner perception largely is that it's better to be on the fluffier side. And people's perception has skewed to the right that we expect animals to be like that. And so there's certainly not a lot of concern until you hit, you know, they have a problem. And then it is much harder to deal with when your horse is diagnosed with insulin dysregulation and things like that. And then owners have to be really serious. And then it's hard, right? Because now we're already managing maybe disease symptoms.
Yeah. And then managing diet on top of that as well. Do you often, how do you stand when it comes to recommending more exercise?
I mean, that would be the ideal, right? But again, the people that are riding and working them heavily, this typically isn't an issue, right? So especially the more intense sports, just because it does, like, there's obviously more caloric work, right, to those intensity sports, but it does, right? Changes metabolism a little bit, just same as humans. But asking people, and literally I did the math once for one presentation I did, and like how many hours of like strong trot it would take to pull weight down on a horse. Like, that owner has got to like really have some dedicated time now to exercising that horse regularly, right? Because it isn't just a little bit. And so that time impact on everybody's life, I think, is hard. So yes, in an ideal world, exercise would be a huge part of it if the horse is healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that there's a study, and again, I'm going to do what you did. There's a study in dogs, I think, where they did look at like the impact of increasing exercise versus changing diet, right? And the diet is really what it comes down to. And like you said, people they don't have time. If they aren't able to do a lot, then, you know, got to hit what might make the most impact and what could be easier for them to manage.
Yeah. And that's, and again, a lot of obesity in horses is because so many of them now are sedentary.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think we've already given everyone a lot of great advice and a lot of great stuff to think about. And just to wrap it up a little bit, if an owner was listening and they had an overweight horse and, you know, maybe they feel a bit overwhelmed by everything that they could be doing or should be doing, if there's one thing that you'd want them to focus on first, what would it be? Like, what would be the first step that they should take?
I would say that the easiest, hopefully, step is you reduce hay intake. So we have to go away from ad libitum. And unfortunately, pasture is a big piece of this, right? So remove ad libitum forage and then apply some version of a slow them down feeding so that we still are kind of trickle feeding them. But the very fact that we've slowed everything down, that we're going to reduce intake, but keep them mentally happy. And then I'll add another piece. have them, you know, take pictures or something, because it can be very disheartening because you're not going to see it, right? You're not going to see a change because it's happening every day, just like things going bad, right?
People yeah, like best, yeah.
But it's harder to see going well, things improving, unless you kind of have some, take pictures, right? Or, you know, take some notes so that you can have something to look back on to say, yes, I'm seeing some changes in this horse. And it's going to take a long time. Don't think this is going to happen overnight.
But even like to your point, you know, small changes, like maybe they won't be obvious if you're not making notes, but even those small changes will encourage an owner to keep going and to keep trying, as opposed to maybe not seeing anything. So, yeah. And I think it's worth mentioning too, that there's a lot of really great equine nutritionists, a lot of great extension specialists. So reach out, you're not alone, and they'd all be happy to help. So
yeah. Yep. And hopefully tailor it to your unique situation.
Yes. Yeah. And your unique horse. Perfect. Well, Dr. Heine, thank you so much again for joining us. I think this was a really important conversation. And I think especially in terms of bridging that gap between what we really know scientifically and what actually works in practice with real owners and real horses and real situations. And thank you to everyone listening. We hope you found this episode helpful and that it gives you some practical tools to take back to your own horse. And as always, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss future episodes, and we'll see you next time.
All right. Thank you so much.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.